an anti-Musk movement. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
I want to welcome you all to the first convening of federal workers against Doge.
Protesting in Washington now.
You want to take away our jobs, no matter how illegal it is, without congressional consent.
And they're out demonstrating the morning after Democrats filed another lawsuit challenging the Department of Government Efficiency, claiming Elon Musk's work to slash federal spending and jobs is unconstitutional. This after a ruling against the president and Doge.
Judge Amir Ali, who was appointed by President Biden, issued a temporary injunction against the Trump administration's decision to freeze USAID funds. The judge's ruling also says the administration can't place hundreds of workers on leave. The judge dismissed the idea that some of the aid has received a waiver, so it could still be dispersed.
Fox's Jessica Rosenthal. The president says USAID is run by lunatics with out-of-control wasteful spending. Vice President Vance is at the Munich Security Conference in Germany.
In Washington, there is a new sheriff in town. And under Donald Trump's leadership, we may disagree with your views, but we will fight to defend your right to offer it in the public square, agree or disagree.
Now, later at the conference, Vice President Vance will meet with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky after Vance told the Wall Street Journal all options are on the table if Russia does not agree to stop the war in Ukraine, including sanctions and possibly U.S. military action. New York City's mayor has upset his fellow Democrats, cooperating with federal immigration officials, allowing them into a jail to target those here illegally who commit crimes. Eric Adams tells Fox.
By having ICE on Rikers Island, part of our gang intelligence, using our intel with NYPD correction officers, we can identify those gangs inside and outside on the street.
The mayor also calls silly allegations he's only doing this so the Justice Department drops bribery and corruption charges against him. That prompted the lead U.S. attorney in New York and five others in the DOJ to resign. They think Adams broke the law. Americans did not shop a lot in the cold, wintry January. Retail sales down almost 1%. America's listening to Fox News.
Seems everything costs more these days. Gas, groceries, and when's the last time you checked your wireless bill? Yikes. When it comes to big wireless, if you're staying, you may be overpaying. Switch to Consumer Cellular and get the same fast, reliable nationwide coverage without the big wireless bill. Plans start at just $20 a month, and that's not a short-term promo. But don't just take our word for it. Here's Jackie and Veronica, real customers.
I didn't know that I could get something for a lot less money that was actually better than who I was with before.
Anytime anybody complains about their cell phone bill, we say, you've got to check out Consumer Cellular.
Our U.S.-based experts will get you switched and saving in about 20 minutes. Just call or click to see how much you can save today. Because when it comes to big wireless, if you're staying, you may be overpaying. Call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com. That's 1-888-FREEDOM or ConsumerCellular.com today. Real people paid to share their opinions in this ad. Plans include $5 credit for auto pay and...
Good morning from the News 11 Information Desk. I'm Danielle Burke-North. Illegal border crossings are dropping dramatically in Yuma. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, in fiscal year 2024, Yuma saw over 19,000 encounters from October through December. The Border Patrol chief says this is a big contrast compared to recent years. They say this drop in illegal crossings is allowing them to focus on other illegal activity along the border. And a new bill has been introduced in the Arizona State Capitol that would regulate the use of biosolids on agricultural lands. Senate Bill 1212 was created by local Arizona Senator Tim Dunn. SB 1212 is now set to go through a third reading in the Senate, and if passed, it'll be sent to the House of Representatives. Join us on the TV side for News 11 every weekday at 5, 6, and 10 for all your local news, weather, and sports. I'm Danielle Burke-North.
Wind is going to pick up for the next 48 hours or so. Sunny and 72 on Friday with 20-mile-per-hour winds, 47 Friday night. 73 and sunny on Saturday, 15-mile-per-hour winds, 50 the low. Sunny, less windy on Sunday, 75, 50 Sunday night.
Investment advisory services offered through CWM, LLC, and SEC Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome to Money Talk with Yuma Investment Group's Tom Rush, founder, wealth advisor, and George Davis Sr. Wealth Advisor.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk here. Another Friday in Yuma. Looks like we're a little overcast, but it feels good. Hopefully, get a little moisture down into the desert, which I know a lot of these desert trees look pretty beat up. This next week is going to be the Ag Summit, and it's going to be Wednesday, Thursday, out at the college, AWC. It's put on by the Vegetable Association. They're doing some demo stuff out there to show, like, the most recent technology. They also have a bunch of booths to, with different businesses there. It's a really, really good place to go. I think anyone can go there and kind of walk around and learn ag and how it affects Yuma. And last week we had the speakers. George is going to be the head speaker out there for one of the lunches. And he works very closely with this other lady, Dari Duvall, and she's on the phone here. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Hey, good. Good. Thanks for being next to your phone. So we wanted to do these two events to kind of pep up the Ag Summit coming up and get people excited to maybe go out there, listen to George speak. He talked very highly of yourself because I believe you're more the research person. But I'm just going to read your title here real quick. You're the Economic Impact Analyst, Department of Ag and Resource of Economics from the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So before we kind of get into the program, because you're going to be on this whole hour, maybe just give a little bit of a background as far as what you've done before to get to this point in your life, and then also kind of summary, like what you do for a living, and then we can kind of jump into the topics.
Yeah, so my background is in economics. I grew up in Arizona, southern Arizona, and I studied econ, and as I started to think about moving forward, I was very much drawn to topics around water and the environment, and that led me to the department here at the U of A, Agricultural and Resource Economics, and I studied with a professor named Bonnie Colby, who was a water economist. She's recently retired, but has, folks that she's worked with as grad students all over the place, including the Bureau of Reclamation. And so that's how I sort of got into agriculture via my interest in water. So, I studied in the department and then was hired to work for Extension, doing analyses, looking at industries focused on agriculture, natural resources. And I've been here working for Extension since 2015. And it's really great because I'm always learning about things that I didn't grow up in ag, but I've come to learn a lot about it and just continually amazed at what goes on all around the state and all around the country, for that matter.
Now, I got to ask, you said southern Arizona, so I got to ask, what town or city were you raised in?
Tucson.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was small, town or something. Okay.
No.
So you got your graduate degree or your doctorate or what kind of schooling?
Yeah, I got my master's here in the Ag and Resource Economics Department. I'm actually close to finishing my PhD as well. So yeah.
Because I think of the U of A Cooperative Extension, I think of the one here in Yuma. But you're talking about the one up in Tucson, right?
Yeah, so actually the way Extension works, and folks may be familiar with this more so in Yuma, but there's county offices throughout the state that are out there on the ground working with producers, working with the communities, and then there are folks embedded within the departments. They may actually be teaching, doing research on campus, and so there are folks within the university on main campus here at the U of A who, travel out to the offices and are working closely with folks in the county offices. But there is sort of a central component of Extension as well.
Okay. Now, before we kind of dive into the topics, I was an econ major too out of college. Are you more of the number cruncher, or are you actually in the field gathering data, or at least someone else is gathering the data and then you're trying to comprise it, or you spend most of your time in the office, or you're in the field, or both?
I spend most of my time in the office. We used to get out a little bit more before the pandemic. That's changed a little bit the way things operate. But I do a little bit of both. Some of the work we do, we are getting direct information from people. We do a lot of surveys. Increasingly, that can be done online, but ultimately, there are some folks that really prefer to sit down in person and speak face to face. So, a little bit of both.
I see. So it seems like you guys would have like an agenda or some kind of study you want done. You push it out to the extensions, and there's other people that probably do the heavier lifting work or count leaves or whatever they do. And then the data comes back to you, and then you assess it. Is that kind of how it works?
Again, it sort of depends on the context. So with some of these economic studies, it really is just focused on, what we're looking at specifically. And oftentimes there will be folks out in the state that are looking to answer a certain question. It might be a research question. It might be something a little bit more simple. And they'll come to us and they'll say, hey, is this something you could do? And so our team will put together a plan. And so a lot of the work we do is actually driven by ag and other natural resource user stakeholder groups around the state. So our job is to provide high quality information that people can use.
Okay. So it's kind of like a grassroots efforts where the farmers probably have problems or issues and the extension helps figure out what it is. And you're involved in that then. Sounds like.
Yeah, that's a lot of the work we do.
Okay. Now, I know George was talking about a big study that came out for Arizona Ag, and I think you were involved in that. So if you want to kind of dive into that and tell us, he explained it a little bit, but maybe listeners weren't listening last week, so you can maybe refresh us on that, and then we can kind of ask you some more questions.
Yeah. So just to clarify for folks, there are two studies that we did that both came out recently. One looks at Arizona's agribusiness system writ large, and then we also have the study that looks directly at Yuma County. So, and of course, Yuma County is a big part of that statewide picture. But so this statewide agribusiness system, there's a lot of supply chain that goes into figuring out these numbers. So we're looking at on-farm agriculture, that's crop production, livestock production, ag support services, which of course are a huge part of the activity going on in Yuma County. We also consider ag input suppliers, as well as forward-linked activity that include ag processing industries, and then distribution and marketing. So actually getting those ag products from the field, from, you know, the dairy to the end consumers, whether that be in Arizona or somewhere else.
Sure.
And then, of course, we look at those multiplier effects.
So you want to talk first about the Yuma study or the Arizona study? Which one?
Well, while we're on the Arizona study, I can just talk about that a little bit. So what we found is, including multiplier effects, and George may have talked about this a little bit, but what multiplier effects are is when you're looking at an industry, it's not just the activity directly with the industry that is linked to that. There are also lots of businesses supplying those industries. So think insurance, think water, electricity, all the inputs that go into producing something, services as well. Those are known as indirect effects. They're also what are known as induced effects. So if you have people working in agriculture, when they go home at the end of the day, they buy groceries. They might need to go to the doctor. And so there are all these seemingly unrelated industries that are supported in part by the activity occurring and the employment occurring in agriculture. So we looked at that direct contribution and found that directly it's $20.2 billion in sales annually, and this was for 2022. Crop industries were $3 billion, livestock was $2.2 billion, and then ag processing was $10.9 billion. So those are kind of the big pieces. Multiplier effects were $10.7 billion, so kind of half on top of that direct effect, and the total sales contribution was $30.9 billion. Statewide for 2022. So some big numbers.
So it measures all the way up to the consumer buying it, right?
Not necessarily. So, you know, that can be a really complicated question to answer because there's so much movement of agricultural products in and out of the state. For all we know, Arizona could be producing wheat that gets sent to Italy that then comes back as pasta. So it can be pretty tricky to track that. What we did look at was distribution and marketing of the products produced in Arizona, just to get that out of the state, or if it's just going directly in state, sort of a measure of that.
So like you mentioned half of it, I think you said $10.7 billion is say, a byproduct. Is it kind of like saying, like, if you're mining gold, it's kind of like the picks and the shovels that people are buying to support the ag mission?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah, so there's this term, sounds fancy, but it's called hypothetical extraction. So basically the idea is if you took this industry, yanked it out of the state, what other effects would that cause? So those are those businesses that all of a sudden, oh, we don't have to supply boxes.
Sure.
We don't have to supply.
Diesel.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what that additional $10.7 billion is measuring.
Okay. And I think what the report kind of summarizes is that Yuma is very efficient on how they are using the water, and they're very instrumental on the GDP for ag in Arizona. Is that kind of the 2 points?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of nice timing having the statewide report and then having the Yuma report, because as you guys know, Yuma is such a big part of Arizona's agriculture and agribusiness system. So diving into Yuma, you know, what we looked at a couple of things. So we sort of did a similar analysis looking at what are those direct effects of agriculture as well as those multiplier effects. So that was one part of the study. We also did an analysis looking at water use and different measures of how productive is Yuma County agriculture with their water use compared to other areas in the Colorado River Basin. And what we found is that Yuma is highly productive, if not one of the most productive counties within the Colorado River Basin. And there are a couple of measures of that. You can look at what, in terms of per unit of water use, and we measure that in terms of acre feet, what is the value of crops produced per unit of water used. And for Yuma, that was, I'm going to not remember it off the top of my head, but I think it was like $1,600, no, $1,581 per acre foot consumed for agricultural production. So that's right at the top of the list in the Colorado River Basin.
So it basically means that for the amount of water being used, there's a large dollar amount attached to the outcome of the product?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So basically, it also means that if you were going to spend money on water or water usage, you'd want to get the most bang for your dollar. And if one, say, 1 ounce of water produces, you know, a dollar worth of something, Yuma's ounce of water might produce $4 worth of something. So if you had to prioritize where the water should go, Yuma should be up top because it's you're getting more bang for your dollar for the water. Does that seem correct?
Yeah, and obviously water rights are very complicated, but as folks are considering policies, an important question to ask is what would be the effects if there were to be some sort of a cut, and where is that going to have the most negative effect economically? And so there you can look at, well, what is the economic productivity of water?
Sure.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to take our first break here. This is Money Talk, 5-6 a.m. Be right back.
Because the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
Given recent events in the financial markets, doesn't a second opinion make sense for your financial well-being? If you've been questioning your investment plan that you have in place, Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management would like to help by offering a free, no-obligation consultation to review your financial affairs. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors. Given recent events in the financial markets, doesn't a second opinion make sense for your financial well-being? If you've been questioning your investment plan that you have in place, Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management would like to help by offering a free, no-obligation consultation to review your financial affairs. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk again. We got our speaker on the phone from Tucson, Dari Duvall. She's Economic Impact and Analysis Department for the Ag and Resource Economics for University of Arizona. And we have her on because next week is the Ag Summit, Wednesday, Thursday at the college. I'm going to be doing exhibits all day. There's going to be booths out there showing what kind of ag products are out there, new technology. So we're trying to get people excited to go out there and walk around and look at things, and it is very interesting. We were talking about the study that U of A did for Arizona Ag and also Yuma Ag, and we're talking about the impact of water and how Yuma produces a lot of money per water or per ounce or per square foot or however you measure that. I'm not a water guy. So what is that? Now, I know getting that information, you want to tell people about it because there could be a water shortage in the future. And I know they're worried about the water. So is that something that you would go to like the state legislature or who or the federal government, or who do you give this report to try to make it worth something?
So our team, we publish our reports, and we make them available to different stakeholder groups. And we end up giving quite a few presentations as well. Ultimately, we make that information available, publicly accessible, for folks to use as they see fit. But we make it available out there and certainly accessible. That's an important part of it. You know, things can be published in academic journals, and it might not be accessible or, you know, easily taken and communicated. So part of what we do with our reports is we have things in very direct terms. The results are all up front. A part of how we distribute our information.
Yeah. And the water isn't, I mean, the states can talk about it as much as they want, but it's pretty much controlled by the federal government, right? The Bureau of Reclamation, or who controls that?
Well, so it's very regionally dependent. So the Colorado River Basin, there's the Colorado River Compact, and so you have, it's not just between the states, it's a binational agreement because the Mexicali area, the Colorado River Delta in Mexico, that's another part of it. So the Colorado River is one situation, and the federal government does get involved with that because you have all of these states that have to cooperate and come to agreements on that. Other areas, it can be very different. And so things are very regional. Some things are multi-state, multinational. It kind of depends on the river basin when you're talking about surface water, or if you're talking about groundwater, then that can be another question too.
I see. So George was saying that we're kind of unique because Yuma, El Centro, and Salinas are like the few places you can get produce in the ground and be efficient at it, right? Like there's not too many other places in the United States that can do this?
Well, so Yuma has this really interesting role, and that's some other research I've done. looking at Yuma and Arizona's role in the national supply of certain commodities. And so we had been hearing anecdotally, people were saying, you know, 80% of winter vegetables come from Yuma, or these different figures being quoted. And so I said, well, okay, let's get to the bottom of this. Let's look at it. And so I went and pulled up some USDA information where they actually track the shipments coming out of different regions. And I started pulling this together, and I found that, indeed, Yuma, Western Arizona, at times is responsible for upwards of 80% of the lettuce being produced in the country during winter months. And then during the summer months, we see the Salinas area kind of, it's a flipping and flopping of the production. And actually, I had the luck to be able to go to some of these lettuce processing plants in Yuma, and it is absolutely remarkable what's going on. There are these huge assembly lines that have to be, assembled and sterilized and put into production within a matter of days. And they move these between the Central Valley and the Yuma area to process this lettuce. And this is stuff going out to food service, restaurants, a lot of these bagged salads. And it is absolutely wild and really, really impressive what's going on there. But what I found was looking at some of these different commodities, processed lettuce, for example, Yuma will be about 100% of the national supply during winter months. So it plays a very important role in that.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I don't know if you know the answer, but if you compare the produce that comes out of Yuma compared to the produce that comes out of Salinas, are we much bigger? Is it like they're one-third the size, we're two-thirds the size? Or it's not 50-50, right?
You know, I haven't really compared beyond the commodities that Yuma really specializes in. But I can say that, and I think George may have talked about this the other day, over the course of the year, the national supply of lettuce is pretty steady. It's not like certain fruits and vegetables where there's an in-season and there's an out-season. Yeah, so, we can, as consumers, we can go to the grocery store and not really think about it. Like, yeah, there will be lettuce, and it's pretty constant. And so what I could tell you is that between these two regions, it's pretty comparable. So during the on-season, Yuma's producing roughly what's being produced in the Salinas area with, a few variations here and there.
I see. I know what the DNA and them coming up with better strains of plants and that. Are you finding that there's more things coming through that they're looking at to try to, like, for example, maybe have a spinach plant or something that doesn't take as much water and it gets the same results? I don't know if you're involved in any of that, but it kind of popped in my head.
That's way beyond me. I do know that there is constantly a lot of research going on looking at how to more efficiently use water and find varieties of different crops that are drought tolerant, heat tolerant, salt tolerant. But again, that's that's way beyond my knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, from Yuma's kind of landlocked, so you got south, you got Mexico, east, you got California, or west, you got California, the north, there's a bunch of state parks and that, and mm-hmm. It's pretty dry. So, Yuma's growing, and I know there's development coming in, and everyone, talks about protecting the farmland, and I think they're really talking more about the produce land, because up on the mesa, there's more alfalfa and lemon trees and things of that sort that probably could be missed, or because they're probably being produced elsewhere, but I know produce is a big thing, and keeping that valley in production is probably crucial for the United States.
And Yuma is very unique in in what it has to offer. So first and foremost, climate. There aren't many other places in the country that have the climate that's appropriate for growing this produce during the winter months. I mean, you can't have lots of hard freezes. On top of that, you have this water supply. It's a fertile river delta valley, the area. And then on top of that, you have, you know, the folks who are working in the ag service industry that are crossing the border. Yeah, exactly. You have labor. So Yuma is very strategically located in that regard. And, you know, it might be hard to find a replacement.
Yeah. But George made a point, which I didn't think about, but he said actually everyone talks about water scarcity, but he's actually said the labor thing's more important because, you know, without pulling it out of the ground, then you have nothing, you know. So he kind of implied being on a border city, it definitely provides the workers. So that's interesting, or never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, when it's time to harvest, it's urgent. And, you know, when you're, especially when you're working with highly perishable commodities like leafy greens, having the people there on the ground to get it done, as well as the entire supply chain after that, like, it is absolutely imperative that work properly, because if something gets left out, if something isn't at the right temperature, you can spoil all of that production
quickly.
So,
yeah.
Yep.
So is there anything that you guys see through the numbers? I guess what could be threatening this area would be water, labor. I mean, we assume the sun and the plants and the soil is good because it, you know, doesn't change much. But anything you see happening on a good level or even maybe a negative level with the Yuma area? I mean, does anything come out of that number-wise? Or
from these numbers, you know, I don't know that we dug too deep into kind of, you know, what's known as a SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, the things that you mentioned.
If you know some of those, can we talk about them? Like, I think that'd be interesting.
Well, so we didn't go too deeply into that, but I think it's probably the same things that that affect people everywhere, and we've already talked about it: the cost of labor, you know, water. There's, you know, folks are working around the issues of salinity and soil health, and those are always things to be dealt with. But again, there are lots of really brilliant people working on those issues. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about Arizona as a whole. I know you kind of ran through the numbers on how much, like, the cattle, I think you said it was $2 billion or something. So what is Arizona as a whole? What do the numbers show about Arizona compared to, like, the other states? Or I know California is the powerhouse, right, with ag?
Yeah. So Arizona, if I can sort of generalize, it's not a big ag state in the traditional sense. I think out of all the states, it maybe ranks 33 in terms of their ag sales. So if you looked at it just in terms of that, you might not think that there's a whole lot going on. But once you focus in on very specific areas, again, going back to Yuma, there's some really highly specialized activity going on. So, again, the winter vegetables, leafy greens in Yuma, that's a huge part. And so, you know, for crop industry, statewide, that was $3 billion. For Yuma County, 1.3. So almost half of the crop sales, Arizona's crop sales, are coming from Yuma County.
Yeah.
Now, livestock, a lot of that is actually dairy. So cattle ranching is huge, and I like to think of Arizona kind of doing a diagonal slice from the northwest corner down to the southeast corner. And so above that diagonal slice, the generally northeast segment of the state, up there you have a lot more cattle ranching, and it's sort of rangelands up there. On the southwest diagonal slice of the state, that's where you have this highly productive commercial agriculture, crop industries, as well as the dairies and the crop industries that are feeding the dairies. So that's alfalfa production, that can be barley and other grain production that are providing feed to those dairies. And Arizona is a state that produces more milk than it uses. So, you know, we're kind of a net, net exporter to other states.
So let me ask you this. If you look at Arizona as a whole, it's a lot of dry dirt, right? I mean, Arizona. So we're number 33 out of the 50 states. But I bet you, or I don't know if you know the number, but we don't farm a lot of the whole state. So maybe in this example, maybe we're only farming 8% of the whole state landmass. I mean, right? We have a small, we don't farm much, where other states like Iowa or California might farm 20% of their land. Does that seem fair to say?
I couldn't speak to the percentages, but I think you're on the right track. So in terms of crop agriculture, and in Arizona, almost all crops are irrigated. It's not a large portion of the state. And because of the climate, and we have in most of these highly productive commercial areas, year-round crop production. Maybe there's some times of the year when it gets really hot and folks cut back during those times. But, you know, alfalfa, for example, Arizona's alfalfa productivity is one of the highest in the country, if not the highest, and that's because you get so many cuttings over the course of the year because you can be growing essentially year-round. So of that land that is being cropped, it tends to be very productive.
Yeah.
Now, actually, if you do look at the share of state land that is in agricultural production, in those federal statistics, they also count rangeland as agricultural land. So you'll actually see a very high percent of the state's land is in agricultural production, but a lot of that is rangeland, which is ephemeral, which means it's just fed by rainfall. So it's not irrigated.
Sure.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense. It's kind of a hot topic, but hey, let's take a break here and we get back, jump on this topic. This is Money Talk, 560 AM.
At Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management, they believe they manage money for their clients differently from many other advisors in Yuma. Their way works in close alignment with their clients' goals. Yuma Investment Group is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor. When it comes to helping clients pursue a comfortable retirement, they're clearly different. Visit YumaInvestmentGroup.com and find out why investors switch to them. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor.
An opinion makes sense for your financial well-being? If you've been questioning your investment plan that you have in place, Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management would like to help by offering a free, no-obligation consultation to review your financial affairs. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
Hey, Yuma, this is Money Talk here, Tom Rush here, and we got our speaker, Dari Duvall, who's from the University of Arizona. She's involved of research on economics and a study that came out for Arizona Ag and Yuma Ag, and we're just talking about that. So my question is, you know, seems like Arizona would be a pretty good place for hemp or for the, you know, marijuana. I mean, I know they like sun and all that. Do you have any input on that, or do you see any numbers that come off from? Because I know there are some places in Arizona that do grow marijuana. They got the nurseries.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a topic that I've looked into too much, but I can say anecdotally from what I've heard with some folks involved in agronomy, I think Yuma was examined in terms of its ability to grow hemp, and I recall there being some issues around heat, but honestly, I can't say I have too much knowledge of that.
Yeah. Well, if we want to get our production up on how much an ounce of water grows, I think the marijuana field would probably blow things through the roof, right? Compared to some of the other products, but
yeah, high value crop indeed.
Yeah. So, so I'm trying to think here. So with Arizona in general, I mean, I know Maricopa, every time I go up there, it looks like there's a new highway and a new city mm-hmm. that springs up. Mm-hmm. I guess in the study, has ag stayed pretty, have they been growing in the right areas where it's not taken away from the ag mix? Have you noticed like in the last, say, 10 years? Or do you find that ag's kind of getting chiseled away on the production number or the GDP numbers that you're talking about?
Well, so over time, I think it's actually held pretty steady if you adjust everything for inflation. I think what we're seeing actually not so much are changes overall, but shifts between crops. So Yuma is a good example of that, where in the past there used to be a lot more cotton, more grains, and over time, that's been changing. So there's been a shift from lower value field crops to high value specialty crops like vegetables and melons.
Mm-hmm.
We also see, I'm looking at a figure from that statewide report, and it's comparing Arizona's production in 1974 to its production in 2022. What you see in 1974, a huge chunk of the value of production is cattle and calves, as well as cotton and cottonseed. And so you're going back to those five C's,
mm-hmm.
Cattle, copper, cotton, citrus, and climate. Now, when you look at 2022, it's a much more diverse mix of crops. So cattle and calves are still there. It's a smaller share of total production. What really has grown are dairy products and vegetables and melons. And then also you see feed crops like alfalfa growing. So part of this is really, as the population has grown, supplying folks with dairy. Again, it's a highly perishable product, and so it tends to be located near big population centers, and that's certainly the case in Arizona. That's why you see it in Maricopa and Pinal counties. That's why you see that alfalfa production in Maricopa and Pinal counties. Alfalfa is heavy to transport, so folks like to produce it near where it's going to be used, which are those dairies.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And I assume, too, over time with production of technology and different kind of tech tractors and whatever else they do, they probably get their production higher numbers a little higher than they were in the 70s and 80s, right? Just from better seed quality or I don't know, chemicals or whatever they're putting on. That seems like that would be the case.
Yeah. Yields have improved, like, a huge amount. And so with cotton, you'll see that the acreage might be decreasing, but the sales don't have quite that corresponding decrease. And that's, the technology, the different seeds, management of pests. Mm-hmm. There's a huge amount of research and technology that goes into that.
I see. Do you have any numbers on like aquatics as far as growing stuff indoors, or is that not really hit your page much?
Like vertical farming.
Yeah, vertical farming indoors.
I don't have those numbers in front of me. It's I know that it's again an area where there's a lot of research and it is very expensive to do. And so it tends to make a lot of sense in places that are space constrained. We don't quite have that issue.
So it's a price. Yet. It's probably a pricing issue then, right? Because you can't grow it cheap enough in Arizona, but might work well some other place that doesn't have the space or the weather or such, right? Water.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's so Canada, if we think about the North American context, both Canada and Mexico have really ramped up their production of crops in what's known as protected agriculture. So that's kind of a spectrum of, you know, there could be fairly simple things like hoop houses, you know, providing just a little bit of cover and protection, all the way to fully automated greenhouses. And Canada has been increasing their production of fresh fruits and vegetables through greenhouse production. So they're not near where Mexico is in terms of the volume of what's being produced, but they are trending in that direction. It's a really interesting development.
Yeah. Well, probably up north is too cold, so they can control the climate inside the nursery. And down south is probably too moist, or I'm sure the climate could be. Some of these vegetables in that, if it's too moist, they get they rot out quicker, or they get certain kind of infections, right? I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right. I'm just an economist. I don't know all those details, but yeah, that sounds right.
Okay. So what else do you want to tell us that, I guess, when I'm not asking, anything that pops in your head that you think listeners might want to hear?
Just kind of thinking about state ag, it's very diverse. And, you know, it goes all the way from tribal ag up in the northeast corner of the state, which concentrated there. It's throughout the state, but concentrated in the northeast corner. And then we can also think about agriculture and agribusiness, not just on-farm ag, but also ag supply chains. And so Santa Cruz County, the Nogales area, That's another thing that we've looked at in the last couple of years. And just Nogales' fresh produce import supply chain is roughly $1 billion industry for the state of Arizona. So
you're talking about the trucks coming up to Mexico to deliver stuff and then the distribution points?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So much like Yuma has a really sophisticated ag supply chain that has to get these highly perishable commodities to the end consumer, whether that's in Arizona or whether it's, you know, even taking things all the way up to Canada. This is kind of a similar situation in Santa Cruz County, this highly specialized supply chain moving, you know, thousands of tons, millions of tons of produce every year. The economic activity that produces in the state. One thing we've started to do is not just look at what's the value of imports, but when these products actually reach the consumer, what does that represent in terms of the sales? So we actually did that in the Yuma report as well. And you can, looking at the margins between, okay, what's the difference between what the farm gets versus the wholesalers, what's the difference in the price between what the wholesalers get and the retailers, you can sort of estimate what this gross retail value is. And so I did that for the leafy greens and other fresh produce coming out of Yuma. And what I found was that at retail, that would represent about $3.2 billion annually. Again, it's interesting to look at in terms of these small areas within the country, whether that be Nogales, whether that be Yuma County, this one area, as that economic activity, you know, goes on further down in the value chain, what that looks like at retail. That gives you another sense of just how important that can be.
So what's interesting is Yuma now has a port of entry in South County, San Luis, Arizona. So you talked about, you know, the billion-dollar import industry out of Nogales. I'm sure that's going to build up over time, too, for Yuma. So that probably, you know, fast forward maybe 10 years from now, probably will add a lot more to the $3 billion through just the imports of through the border crossing would be my guess.
Yeah, and another thing that I like to think about with Yuma is, you know, it's Yuma, but it's a regional economy, and you see this in border regions like Nogales. Nogales is, they call it Ambos Nogales. There's Nogales on the north side of the border, and there's Nogales on the south side of the border, and it operates as a region, and that applies to Yuma. There's Yuma, there's San Luis, there's the areas on the California side of the border, Imperial County. It's all connected, and so as you see growth of border crossings of fresh produce, that all just grows this regional agricultural economy. So it's interesting to think about what might happen as that progresses.
Sure. Yeah. No, that is. So I guess when I was raised in East County, but you take farming and, the Yuma farmland and all that, for granted, because you just see it every day and it's not a big deal. But we should really be pretty thankful for what we got in our backyard, huh?
Yeah, I'll admit I'm I'm guilty of being one of those people that had always driven through Yuma. What do they call them in California? Zonies.
Mm-hmm.
The people that drive from central Arizona, southern Arizona to San Diego. And I just really didn't have an appreciation for what was going on in Yuma. But as I've gotten into agriculture and learned more and gotten off of I-8 and mm-hmm. actually gone into those warehouses, gone into those processing facilities, I was just blown away by the sophistication of what's going on there, the amount of activity. And, oftentimes there's this idea that, agricultural communities are kind of sleepy.
Sure.
Yuma is a vibrant place. There's a lot mm-hmm. going on. And that's really what's impressed me about the region as I've learned more and more about it.
Sure, yeah. Well, instead of going to San Diego, you need to buy a second vacation home in Yuma, so that way you have a nice place to go look at the fields and, count things. So.
Yeah.
I'm joking.
Years ago, we also did a Yuma visitor survey, so that was looking at all the folks that come in, the seasonal population. Winter is the hot time to be in Yuma. But it was really impressive to see where folks were coming from. And yeah. There's a huge Canadian contingent that comes to Yuma in the winter. Yeah. So it's a really interesting and dynamic place.
Yeah. Everyone knows the retirees come down here, so it helps the economy during the winter months. But a lot of people don't realize, too, just the laborers coming from California to work the fields, because they are, mm-hmm. They do travel. That's a big boost in the arm, too, because all those people need place to stay, food, gas, all that. So
mm-hmm.
we got, we're pretty different different city here as far as what we're doing community.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, and we hope George is going to be the speaker at the lunch event, I believe on Wednesday, or it could be Thursday.
February
I'm not
20th.
For sure. February 20th, okay.
Yeah.
If you go to the agsummit.com, Google YumaAgSummit.com, there's a list of all the things going on, what time that taking place. But if you haven't been out there, you really need to just, if you have some time, you can spend at least a couple hours out there going from booth to booth and looking at things. But the event seems to get a little bigger every year, and I think it's definitely a good thing for Yuma to continue to do. So, we appreciate that coming up. So, well, I think our time is up, and I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully someday I get to meet you in person, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks so much. My pleasure.
Thanks. Bye.
To enjoy a longer, productive retirement, you need an investment portfolio that continues to work for you. Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management specializes in solid financial advice. Whether you require low volatility, liquid assets, or longer-term investments for higher returns, it's important to discuss your options with a financial advisor. Schedule a consultation with Yuma Investment Group Wealth Management today. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Carson Partners, a division of CWM LLC, is a nationwide partnership of advisors.
And he looks at her and says, "Hey, darling, I can remember when you could stop with love. Oh, but ain't that America?"
Hey, Yuma, this is Tom Rush again, and we got a couple minutes left here, so we don't want to have you listen to the music. So Russ and I are here. Russ has a little raspy voice, so we'll try to...
It's going to get better. Yeah. It has to.
So what do you think about... You heard George talk last week. Yeah. You heard her talk this week. Any thoughts in your head?
Well, these guys are very, very professional economists and water and stuff, but it's not what you normally think of farmers being close. But it takes all these guys.
Yeah,
you know, to study the details, you know, that...
The power of academics, you know, like U of A or even ASU.
But they're always amazed at how much Yuma is just a professional, go-get-it organization, not the...
Sleepy...
Not like out in the Midwest. If it rains, I got a good crop. If it doesn't, I don't. I mean, these guys are
24/7 hustling, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and every little aspect of it.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is they also have to replace the produce afterwards to get the soil back up, so they almost have to go in and do plant grass and other items.
Oh, crop rotations and stuff. But these guys are like professionals.
Yeah,
you know, they're the top. You know, making the best use out of every drop of water, as well as getting the right plants, right rotations.
Yeah,
and trying, you know. The margins are thin on these guys usually. And, you know, granted, they have thousands of acres, so it looks like big numbers, but the scales can balance win or lose.
Oh, yeah, something happens. Like, yeah. I know it's been a lot hotter this year than normal, and I talked to some of the farmers. I said, how's that affecting you? And they kind of put their hands in the air and say, well, it's different. So any little bit of weather, whether it's cold or hotter, I think it has to do a lot with when it comes off, because it could come off because it's hotter, but if you don't have the labor and you don't have it lined up to pick the stuff, you know, you got a problem. So.
Oh, yeah. And then there's the market price.
Yeah.
On top of it.
But even your business, you're in the automobile fixing business. What percentage of your people or do you think is directly related to ag? And that could be someone from Salinas coming over that could fix a car. It could be a, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. We don't do a lot of work directly with any of the ag businesses.
So it'd be the people that work ag.
Yeah, the people that work there, but I don't really know. Well, I mean, obviously a lot of them do.
Yeah.
I mean, we're in Yuma.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to run into them.
Yeah, yeah.
So a lot of them do.
Sure. And you like people with older cars, right? That way they can be fixed more often.
We do. We do have a lot of those.
Yeah.
And those are... not the easiest.
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that
can
cost you a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Well, diagnosis and then the parts and, you know, it takes more labor sometimes. And a lot of those guys, it's just a hobby car. They don't want to put everything into it.
Sure.
But they want it right.
Yeah.
Because we have Midnight at the Oasis, you know, you want it right.
Yeah. So I've been in the financial advisory for, 30 years now.
And you
never second guess what you could have done, but part of me thought what else would I have done if I didn't find this industry? I think I would have worked for a farm, and I think I would have been the office guy.
Well, you grew up around farms.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't like necessarily working outside in the fields, you know, doing the labor, but I think I think I could have been one of those farm guys that, you know, look at numbers and try to get things together for people. But anyways, that's could have, would have, should have, right?
Oh, yeah, well, you could retire and go into farming. That's fine.
Yeah, that's probably too expensive to get the land nowadays. So anyways, Yumo, have a great weekend. Everyone stay safe. There is the what's going on this weekend? Anything big that people should go to?
Well, I'm going to be at the bike race on tomorrow morning in Welton. There's a bike run, 100 miles, 60 miles, 30, 25, a two-mile fun run.
Okay, and don't forget to take your significant other or loved one out tonight on Valentine's Day.
It is,
at least pick up some flowers or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, bye.
See you.
Cannon through the bathroom window.
The
opinions voiced in Money Talk with Tom Rush and George Davis Wealth are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, financial or tax advisor prior to investing. Guests on Money Talk are not affiliated with CWM LLC. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC and SEC Registered Investment Advisor.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.